From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the closing market report for the 28th day of April, 2023. I'm Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Al Kleiss of Kleiss Commodities out of Wayzata, Minnesota. Mike Zuzlow is out of the office today. A bit later in the program, we'll hear from Eric Snodgrass of Nutrien Ag Solutions about the agricultural weather forecast. And along the way, we'll return to Washington, D.C., where I spoke last week with Rob LaRue of the National Farmers Union about the 2023 Farm Bill, and I'll remind you to make a call to us at 217-244-9455 or go online to make a pledge at willpledge.org in support of the ag programming that comes to you from Illinois Public Media.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
The Closing Market Report is a production of Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world. You may find and listen to us on demand anytime you'd like at willag.org. That's willag.org. Or search us out in your favorite podcast application. Places like Apple Podcast, Google Podcast, Spotify, Stitcher, SoundCloud, NPR One, almost any podcast application that you can think of will show up there, including Amazon Music and in Audible. By the way, when you're online at willag.org, you can just click and play from the website, and up at the top of the page, there's a little donate button. I'd like you to think about that for just a bit, because if this program makes a difference to you, we're hopeful that you'll pledge your support for it. This is, after all, public radio, and you're the public in public radio. About 40% of our budget comes from you, our listeners. You can do that online at willag.org. Hit the donate button up at the top of the page, or call 217-244-9455. I'll repeat that twice more. 217-BIG-WILL or 217-244-9455. Al Kleiss now joins us from Kleiss Commodities. He's in Wayzata, Minnesota. That's not too far outside of St. Paul, Minneapolis, if I remember correctly. Hi, Al. Thanks for being with us. First, we'll talk about the market, but what are conditions like on the ground there, and have farmers been able to plant?
Very uneven, Todd. Thanks for calling. But southern Minnesota, right up against the Iowa line, a few people have been able to get 20 or 30% of their corn done. I think the last report showed 1% of the corn being planted nationwide. Western, northwestern Minnesota, it's raining again today. North and South Dakota are very, very wet. So it's an ongoing concern, and the cool temperatures certainly are not allowing conditions to dry out very fast. So our hope for an early spring is gone. Maybe our hope for a normal spring is also starting to disappear.
I made note that you were telling folks, at least through the Twitter account, that you've turned your attention to wheat, spring wheat in particular. Why is that the case?
Spring wheat, really, to get a normal yield, you should have that crop planted by May 15th. A report last week showed that we were way behind normal. We should normally have about 12% of the crop planted. We only had 5% of the crop planted. And I don't think they made very much progress at all in North Dakota last week. Some areas of Montana were able to plant. North Dakota is the largest producer of spring wheat. And at a certain point, they will opt to go to soybeans, sunflowers, some other crop, because not only does your yield get hit when you go beyond May 15th, but also quite often you have large quality discounts.
Thursday's markets in Chicago pained corn and soybean producers, many in the industry, the analyst as well. What did you make of that move?
The surprise to me is in wheat. The fact that, you know, when Russia invaded Ukraine, you're at 820 wheat, you took it up to 1420, and nearby wheat now trading at 612. Combination of the China canceling their purchases of about 20 million bushels over last week, a pretty good weather forecast in most of the nation, Todd, for getting the crop planted, and then major fund liquidation. So it's been kind of a brutal week in the corn market.
I made note that there were some things on the wire service that suggested China may not purchase as much, not only from the United States, but from Brazil and the size of their soybean crop as well. Does this concern you?
Oh, yeah. Yes, definitely. If China's demand slows down at a time when you've got record production coming out of Brazil. And at the same time, we have looks like pretty normal season here in the U.S. Usually the saying is a cure for low prices, low prices. But if you have a global recession and slowdown in demand, it's a negative for the commodity price outlook for this next year.
What does that tell you about the pricing the producers should do for both corn and soybeans?
I think they need to be realistic. A while ago, everybody wanted to have $6 December 23 corn, and now they want $5.80. And I think $5.50 to $5.60 will be a gift right now. We have to stop going down before we can begin to establish some upside targets. For beans, producers had the opportunity to sell $14 beans. Now they want $13.50. Be very happy to get new crop November beans back up in the area of $13. You have to be realistic, especially concerning long-term corn price outlook with wheat as cheap, trading as cheap as it is, not only in the United States, but around the world.
The Biden administration announcing through US EPA that it will allow E15 sales for the summer. Does that make much difference?
Long term, I think it's the right move. I think long term it's beneficial. If we do see a slowdown in driving and normal gasoline consumption because of people losing their jobs, or we get into some type of economic slump, the slowdown in gasoline demand is what concerns me as far as ethanol and corn prices as we look ahead to the balance of 2023.
And finally, can we talk about conditions along the Mississippi and what that means for producers in your area?
Yeah, we've stopped the barge traffic, it looks like, for a couple of weeks. We have a lot of our grain that moves down the Mississippi River from ports in both Savage, Minnesota, Red Wing, Minnesota. It's going to definitely have an effect on the basis in those areas until we get that open again. Fortunately, we also have a lot of ethanol plants that continue to bid pretty aggressively for corn, but it's an ongoing concern. It's a seasonal concern. We went from being way too dry and too low about 10 months ago to now having too much water in the upper Mississippi.
Thank you so much for taking the time with me today, Al.
All right, Todd, call anytime. Thank you.
That's Al Kleiss. He is with Kleiss Commodities out of Wayzata, Minnesota. If you've already done it, thank you so very much for dialing in at 217-244-9455 or going online at willpledge.org to make your donation in support of the agricultural programming that comes to you from Illinois Public Media. Or you can do that right now if you haven't already. Again, 217-BIG-WILL or willpledge.org. Now up next, we'll return to a conversation I held last week in Washington, D.C., this time around with the president of the National Farmers Union, Rob LaRue, about their priorities as it's related to the 2023 Farm Bill.
It falls in a few buckets. Number one, making sure that the Farm Bill that we get ultimately isn't just addressing today's challenges, but looks ahead to the next 5 years. We know that sometimes there's a temptation in Farm Bills as they're being prepared to write them for the market conditions right now. And that may not be what we're facing in just a couple years. So, hopefully it'll be one written with some flexibility there. I think separately, Farmers Union has been pushing nationally a Fairness for Farmers campaign really centered around a number of competition issues, whether it's right to repair, whether it's looking at cattle markets and Packers and Stockyards Act, things like product of the USA labeling. We're certainly wanting to make sure that those kind of competition issues are also included in the conversations around what the next Farm Bill looks like. Ultimately, though, the other issue is making sure that if we can't get a Farm Bill done on time, and I know that there's a lot of money against that, that we can at least get a Farm Bill done that's bipartisan and get it done as quickly as possible.
Anything that you think should be changed in the ARC and PLC programs?
You know, as far as our members go, they certainly like that safety net. Certainly, if we can kind of raise the bottom up on that just a little bit, if we can build in even more flexibility, I know that there are a lot of cost scores going on out there right now. We're following a lot of conversation that a lot of the Senate and House members are looking at right now. So it certainly is very much on our mind.
So when you say raise the bottom line, you mean what exactly?
So, again, I think if we're talking about reference prices, if we're talking about, ways to improve the safety net there, I think that without getting too specific, because there are a number of proposals out right now, and quite frankly, our board continues to look at all those options.
Well, I do want to ask, is there a north-south issue here, a rice-wheat issue, for instance? What kinds of issues might you have to deal with that are going to be sticky as they're related to the amount or dollars that are expended? Because some of those numbers can be raised a long way and not have that big of an impact on the total budget. Others, for instance, on corn, soybeans, and wheat.
Yep.
Could be raised a penny or two and have a huge impact.
Oh, absolutely. And right now we don't have, I would say that within our organization, we don't have a north-south problem. But I think you can appreciate as we get a firmer look at all of those projections and folks begin to coalesce, certainly I think that there will be those commodities where it'll be more attractive than others. But you know, one of the other things beyond Title I programs and making sure that that's there is crop insurance and a lot of conversation right now about ways to build in more access to risk management tools, to more diverse farms and ways to kind of, whether it's whole farm or something like that. But I think that the other challenge with crop insurance is we're watching very carefully this conversation around the debt ceiling. And as there are calls to make cuts, where are those cuts going to come? Certainly there are calls for cuts in lots of places in the farm bill, crop insurance, nutrition programs, and so forth. I hope that doesn't distract us on making sure that we can keep the farm bill together, keep it strong, because that's what we need.
Okay, so just to clarify for the audience, to make sure they understand that ARC PLC and the food and feeding programs are all under the Title I, crop insurance and farm bill. Crop insurance is a different function, but everybody starts to look at how much is going to the farm. There has been some discussion, and this is related to your crop insurance and wider risk management, about trying to incorporate a third pillar. This is what Carl Zuloff called it in one of his most recent pinnings. That could be used to support farmers in not such good conditions, whether that be because of just the market itself or that there's an actual disaster within an area, a drought, a flood, something like that, or something else that might affect a livestock producer, I suppose. How do you see that playing out? Will there be much conversation around the third pillar about incorporating disaster aid in some form in an annual budget as opposed to in an ad hoc form?
Yellow, this seems to be a conversation that just keeps coming back. And I think we'll see this coming back each farm bill cycle if we don't find a sustainable way to make sure that we can build in, whether we're calling it a permanent disaster, whether we're talking about a third pillar in there. The fact remains is that we still need to strengthen the safety net that's there. We still have this disaster element that needs to be addressed. And like a lot of folks out there, we're going to be looking at all the options. At the end of the day, though, there is not going to be a lot of extra money around in this farm bill. But certainly we're working with the other commodity groups, with other farm organizations, to make sure that farmers ultimately don't pay the price for a weakened farm bill.
How important is it for you, the National Farmers Union, to reach across the aisle, so to speak, to work with those that are in the food and feeding program side that are working on behalf of those programs? And how often do you talk with them?
Well, first of all, I would say that we cannot afford, even within the farm and commodity and livestock space, we can't afford to have many divisions among the farm voice because it's so few. But any farm bill has to have that broader coalition. And when you have food and nutrition programs representing such an important and enormous part of the farm bill overall safety net, we have to have those regular conversations. We're a part of a number of coalitions around making sure that we have strong anti-hunger programs. And I know that most of the other farm groups and commodity groups are also very much engaged in those conversations. So it's definitely ongoing. It has to be, because we have to pull all of these pieces together and somehow get this, you know, north of $1 trillion over 10-year program across the finish line sometime this year.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Rob LaRue is the president of the National Farmers Union. I spoke with him in Washington, D.C. last week. Of course, you're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It is public radio, the farming world, and you're the public in that part of the word. And you helped to fund us. In fact, a large part of our funding, I think more than 40% now, comes from you, our listeners. And that makes it really important for the ag audience to step up each and every time. This time around, we're in the midst of our spring fund drive. I kind of like the $160 level, $120, $180, $40, $320, $480, $640, whatever you decide to give is perfectly fine. But do that right now. Don't wait. Do it now. 217-244-9455. That's 217-BIG-WILL, 217-244-9455, or if you're listening online, you can just hit the donate page, donate button at the top of the page at willag.org. Hi, Eric Snodgrass. I heard you there. Thank you much for being with us this afternoon.
Yeah, I heard what you did too. You're calling out all the dollar amounts that match field sizes, weren't you?
yeah, I do. Well, you know, you do what you can. What you can. Speaking of field sizes, do you think planting progress will continue at a rapid pace now that maybe we're going to try to warm some temperatures up?
Yeah, and I'll be honest, I was surprised at how quickly Illinois went after it, given the cooler conditions, right? I mean, we had, of course, we talked about this for a couple of weeks now, but blew the door open on after Easter, very mild. And then we had a lot of cold air that came in behind that, including some frost events and some cold rain. But we just kind of kept pressing forward. And here we are getting these temps up each day in the 60s. And even though we got a colder weekend coming up where those highs are going to struggle to get out of the 50s, especially on Sunday, we will, we're still going to see folks taking advantage of the really dry weather. And what's going on right now is, I think, I probably shouldn't say this as definitively as I am, but I think we may, for especially the most of Illinois, have seen our last frost event. Now, it doesn't mean we don't have some cool nights coming through, but I think we're going to get through this pattern and then get past, you know, the climatological last dates and start to see some warmth coming in. And all that heat right now is out west. It's in California, and they are going up into the 90s. A lot of snowmelt in the Sierra Nevada, so there's major flood issues there. And if you haven't heard what's going on in the Tulare Basin, that's down there in like the San Joaquin Valley, they've had to blow out several levees and let lots and lots and lots of acreage flood, kind of like we had to do in 93 on the Mississippi, if you remember that. And by the way, speaking of the Mississippi, we have several gauges in the upper Mississippi, so Wisconsin, Minnesota, Iowa, northern Illinois, those areas that are right now, the river gauges are showing about 2 to 3 feet below record stage in floods. So yeah, here we are. We're at this point in spring, and there's still some adversity to overcome, but things are kind of maybe looking better here in the near term.
Speaking of 1993, this will be the 30th anniversary of the Great Flood of 93. That one took NASS by surprise, or they had to do some adjustments. So did everybody else, just based on the number of acres that were flooded out. But that acreage which was flooded out came way deep in the growing season. In fact, I think flood stage topped out at like very end of August, if I remember correctly. So a ways to go with that. And we have to get through, I don't know, the next 10 days first, and then maybe the month of May. What do you see for those two things?
Yeah. So as we look out forward, you know, you bring up something interesting though about 93. It was a late flood, right? I mean, it was summer. It was all summer long that it didn't stop raining because we had a big high that parked over Canada and a big one that parked over Georgia. And we got tucked in between. It was just nonstop rain. Now, we don't necessarily see that setting up for this year, certainly not for May. And what I see going on in May is we're going to start to warm things up after we get through this weekend into early next week. Temperatures are really going to start to jump up there where we're able to finally accumulate some GDUs in this area, more than just about 30 or 40 a week, but maybe approaching 80, 90, or 100 once we get into the warmer conditions here. So drier, that's the one thing, though, that we're going to be seeing. It may not be until late next week that we start to see the pattern shifting in a way to start to deliver more moisture back into this area. And we need it. Honestly, we do need it. We're dry, and we need to recover that. But May is a stormy month. You know, historically, it is our stormiest month.
And so we're going to be watching for weaker troughs to dip into California. The flow comes out of the southwest, and that could light up the plains, which would help with their drought situation and possibly bring in some stormy conditions for us here as well. So I do not think May is settled. I know that the atmosphere is open and moving, and the MJO is on the move. El Nino is developing. We have a lot of things that are in transition. So that just pushes us forward into a May that could be quite, quite volatile.
Speaking of pushing forward, 217-244-9455. Push those buttons or go online and make your donation now. In support of the ag programming from right here at Illinois Public Media, you mentioned the summer. El Nino is in play. What's the outlook?
Well, the outlook is a bit conflicting, I guess, would be the thing to say, is that if the El Nino dominates, you're going to have a lot of happy farmers in the state of Illinois. We're going to get northwest flow during the summer. That tends to generate storms and tends to keep the extreme heat away. And we're only bringing it in for short durations rather than days or weeks of it, you know. But there's still some cold water off the West Coast that I want to see gone. Get rid of that cold water off the West Coast. That tends to really help out the central U.S. farmer avoiding heat stress. So at this point in the game, we look out there, and what we see is right now things are shaping up to be a pretty good summer. But we just need to keep an eye on those West Coast ocean temperatures. So right now, I would just say that given the way things are shaping up, it's pretty good that we are able to really scramble and get in the fields early. Let's hope with emergence and then the kind of the crop going through its vegetative stages, it looks as healthy as I hope it can, and could be a good summer shaping up for us.
In that case, unless there's a real problem with the Safrina outlook in Brazil, I don't want to talk about South American weather. However, we probably ought to check in on some of the places in Western Europe and into Ukraine and Russia.
Yeah, and unfortunately, that Safrina crop does look good. So let's go to Europe. And, we've had some drought issues showing up in the Iberian Peninsula. That, of course, is where Spain and Portugal are. That also goes into parts of Northern Africa. And remember, we do grow wheat in those areas as well. Very hot right now. Temperatures approaching 100 Fahrenheit in that part of Europe. Now, remember, they've been dry there, very dry. But it's not been dry in Central Europe. It's not been dry in like the UK, and it's not been dry over in Ukraine. So what we see going forward over the next, let's call it month and a half, is probably above average spring rains in Ukraine and the Russian wheat belt and above average rains in parts of Europe. So we need to watch that carefully because this could be a signal that they could start avoiding some early stresses on drought everywhere except for Spain and Portugal.
Hey, thank you much. I appreciate it.
Yeah, you bet.
That, of course, is Eric Snodgrass from Nutrient Ag Solutions and Agrible helping us out on this Friday afternoon with the closing market report. You can help us out too, 217-244-9455. That's 217-BIG-WILL. I'm at that 40, 80, 120, 160, ding, 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 or 320, 640, whatever you feel comfortable with. Call in with your donation now and make sure you tell them you're calling in support of agriculture or write it in the comments section there at the donate button. You can find that at willag.org at the top of the page or at willpledge.org. Commodity Week is next.